Brian Lehrer, WNYC. And all right, listeners, there has been a definition change recently, which could literally blow your mind. But I hope it doesn't. That would be truly terrible. If you look up the word literally in several dictionaries these days, you will also find the definition of figuratively. Crack open the Merriam-Webster dictionary, or let's be honest, just Google it. And here's what it says on literally. Definition one, in a literal sense or manner. And definition two, in effect, virtually, as in, will literally turn the world upside down to combat cruelty or injustice. Just in case you missed it, definition two is literally the opposite of definition one. Google's definition now includes, quote, used for emphasis or to express strong feeling, not being literally true. This whole thing made news last week after a post on Reddit, but dictionaries have been dealing with the figurative definition of literally for quite some time now. So at what point do lexicographers just throw their hands up in the air with any definition? When is it okay to respond to changes in popular meaning? Joining me now to literally explain is Steve Klein Edler, executive editor of the American Heritage Dictionaries. Hi, Steve. Welcome back to WNYC.
Thank you, Brian, for having me on again. It's always a pleasure to speak with you.
And listeners, our lines are open. What are some other words with changed definitions? We're thinking of, hopefully, you can think of some as well, as we've been getting a lot of Facebook input on this. Irregardless, we'd love to hear from you on the air now as well. Haha. Hopefully, you will call in. Those are two of them. Hopefully, and irregardless, we'll go over those. 212-433-WNYC. 212-433-9692. What are any other words like literally and hopefully and irregardless that have had their definition change through a pattern of misuse? 212-433-WNYC. So Steve, let's talk about literally first. What would we find if we looked up literally in your dictionary, the American Heritage?
You would find the types of meanings you were talking about, the literal sense in a literal manner, word for word. And you would also find a definition marked usage problem used as an intensive before a figurative expression. We entered this back in the 80s in preparation for the third edition. And like most other dictionaries, including several of our competitors, we have a very lengthy usage note. If your listeners go to ahdictionary.com and look up the word literally, they can literally read the usage note. So there's two things going on. There's this linguistic language issue where language changes. People use words in ways that they didn't decades or centuries ago. This use has been going on for well over a century, probably even longer than that. What as it is our duty in recording the language to make mention of this, but we also recognize that many people do not like this kind of usage and it's considered to be a usage error. In that regard, that is a really good thing to trot out to our usage panel, ask them their opinion on it. And this usage note where we talk about why we talk about the fact that it is so widely dismissed, and we can give some percentages on how the panel feels about it. So we're both according how the language is being used, and we're also commenting on how people who, wordsmiths and other people, linguists, their opinions on it. So we kind of cover both angles.
And we know this argument over literally has literally been going on since at least 2002 when comedian David Cross did this routine.
When you misuse the word literally, you are using it in the exact opposite way it was intended. It's not like a little goof. It's not like, you know, you said like penultimate, you meant ultimate, like, you know, you're off by one. You completely misuse it, and you should stop using the word forever until you figure it out.
David Cross from his 2002 routine, and thanks to several of our listeners who pointed that sketch out to us, which we didn't know when you knew we were going to do this segment. Do you want to talk for a second, Steve, about how that happened to the word literally? How does a word come to be used as kind of the opposite of its original meaning?
Well, this goes in the 1920s. The language critic H.W. Fowler was already talking about this. Language is you can't pin it down; it shifts. Once it stops changing, it's essentially a dead language. There is a really excellent essay by the linguist Dennis Barron. He writes a blog called The Web of Language at the University of Illinois, and he has a very lengthy essay for your. Readers who care to look it up online, that explains how for example, a word like irregardless, which at first glance people say, well, you've got a double negative, you've got all this stuff going on, but we do this with language all the times with words like debone, which means the same thing as bone, or unravel, which means the same thing as ravel. What happens is certain items get codified as just being wrong. Irregardless will probably never be accepted as a legitimate English word because our grammar teachers from first grade on up have wrapped it into our skulls that this is not a correct English word. So certain words just have very strong stigma attached with them. Literally is one of them. And it's one of many examples of words that, if you thought about it, don't necessarily make sense, but that's just how people use them.
David in Brooklyn's got one. Hi, David.
Yes. Good morning. How are you?
Good.
Thank you for taking my call.
What's your word?
I wanted to use the word peruse. People usually say, I'm just perusing the classified ads, or I'm perusing the newspaper. And if you look it up in the Oxford Dictionary, as I have, it could mean either to read briefly or to read intently. So my joke to them is, I say, break out your microscope if you're perusing the newspaper.
Thank you very much. Go ahead.
Yeah, this is an interesting one that we've balloted several times over the past couple decades. Peruse, of course, means to read or examine, typically with great care. There's also this other sense your caller was referring to glance over, skim, which is pretty much the opposite of the original sense. Again, this usage note can be viewed at ahdictionary.com. Just look up the word peruse. Interesting, we gave our usage panel the sentence, he perused the contract until he was satisfied that it met all of his requirements. And we gave them things like the library check to see which titles had been perused in last month and which ones had been left untouched. 70% of the panel rejected that example in 1999, but only 39% rejected it in 2011. So you can see, even among language purists, its resistance to this sense is fading, not completely, but it's not as strong as it used to be, and it becomes a problem because when you're using this word, you as a careful speaker would assume that he or she is speaking to other careful speakers and will understand the intention. Sometimes you have to resort to circumlocution or use other words if you want to be crystal clear about which meaning you're trying to get across.
John in Fort Lee, you're on WNYC. Hi, John.
Hi, Brian. How are you?
Good. What's your word?
Pathetic. It's a word that I feel has sort of evolved over the past few years. Now, when people say something is pathetic, there's really a strong element of criticism, of derision in it. And in the past, I always thought pathetic didn't come along with that import, that it really meant a thing or some person that you're supposed to be really sympathetic to. It's a word that's evolved, and in fact, in a lot of ways, it's evolved, perhaps like you're saying, has done with literally. It's almost turned 180 degrees around. Pathetic, although it wasn't a compliment, at least you were supposed to feel bad for something that was pathetic. Now you're supposed to, be dismissive of it.
Somehow, I don't think when Beethoven wrote the Pathetique Symphony that he was writing about pathetic music or writing pathetic music. But
exactly.
So, Stephen, you familiar with that one?
This is just another standard meeting. I'm going back. It's in our fifth edition. It's in our fourth edition. I'm checking our database now. I mean, it's actually a fairly long-standing sense of the word, and it's just one of the accepted senses of the meaning of the word pathetic. We show arousing or deserving of sympathetic sadness and compassion, and we have another sense, arousing or deserving of scornful pity. We've revised the definition slightly in 09, but not in a significant way. So we've entered it that way for several decades at least. And I'm sure if I researched other dictionaries online, it's a pretty straightforward definition.
Mm-hmm. What about the word apathetic? Does that derive from the same thing?
Does the word apathy or apathetic derive from
right.
the same
thing? Right. If something is pathetic and in the more sympathetic sense that John was using it, it's to have sympathy for somebody or something or somebody who's deserving of sympathy. Apathetic usually means you don't care. I'm just curious if they come from the same place.
Well, apathy is its own word. Apathetic was made on the model of pathetic. Apathy itself comes from, you can take it all the way back to Greek, meaning without feeling, without empathos. You can see the shared mm-hmm. root.
Yeah.
But apathy entered English from Latin, which entered it from Greek on its own, separate from
right.
The other
okay.
sympathy
right.
and all those.
All right.
But
good one.
Apathetic is modeled on that.
George in Mount Kisco, you're on WNYC. Hi, George.
Hi, Brian. I have a peeve with what I think is the misuse of the word celibate. When I was growing up, if you refrained from sex, that was known as chastity. If you were celibate, it meant simply that you were unmarried. Now I think the tendency is to combine both meanings in the word celibate. So you could take it as either being unmarried and having a full sex life or being married and having no sex.
Is that true, Steve? Did celibate simply mean unmarried at some time?
Currently, it refers to, your caller is right, it refers to both senses. I don't have the history with me, so I don't know at what point in time that sense entered into the language. I know you speak frequently with Ben Zimmer. He might be able to answer that one, but it has been standard for quite some time.
Here's another one. Sanction, which can
yeah.
mean exactly two opposite things, to allow or approve of and to restrict or disapprove of.
And that's true. And cleave is another example of that type of phenomenon where the word can mean exactly opposite it's two definitions.
Cleave, I don't see it right away. Wouldn't that be to cut something in half or something like that? Oh, it could also mean to join. Is that what you're saying?
It's a different word from a different, it's spelled the same way. It's a separate word with a separate etymology, but there is a sense of cleave that means to adhere to stick fast, to be faithful. They come from the same Middle English word, and they come from slightly different Old English words that were spelt similarly but weren't the same.
Uh-huh. Linus in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Linus, hello.
Hi. I think we should be nicer to foreigners. We've made English language or American English much too complicated. And using the word decimate, for example, to mean to totally destroy, or even the word totally, and phrases like in terms of, which are completely unnecessary, and the disappearance of the subjunctive, and words like pre-plan. If I plan something, I'm pre-doing it. it's getting to be pretty annoying, and I'm not even a purist about language like my dad, who never wanted anything to change.
Linus, thank you. And so on that note, and we're going to run out of time in about a minute, we think of dictionaries as these immutable reference points. You tell us how to use words. But we've been hearing these examples and discussing them of how definitions have been changed by use or even misuse. Do you think a dictionary should uphold a certain proper usage of words or just be a reflection of how they're used?
I think it can do both. It is definitely a reflection of how people use language. And we can, through the judicious use of usage notes, explain when there are usage issues that will lead people astray, again, for careful speakers or careful writers of English who want to be very precise. It's good to know where these pitfalls happen to be. And so we can both reflect on how language is actually used, and at the same time, we can also point out items that you want to be cautious in using.
Well, we didn't even get to presently, which can mean in the present or not. But we know that in the present, we need to say goodbye to Steve Klein Edler, executive editor of the American Heritage Dictionaries. Literally, we appreciate it. Totally.
Thank you so much. I've had a great time, and I look forward to speaking to you again in the future.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC.